Blog Talk Radio.
That volume up a little bit. We can't hear it like he should. Sounds like children singing a song. Patriotism.
Welcome tonight to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight on this kind of
chilly,
brisk
night?
Pretty good,
Don. I was just calling out to you there, trying to catch your attention from Studio B. The volume was kind of down low on that. That was obviously a song by young people, Black and White Together,
yeah,
or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Jesus Loves Little Children, dedicated
yeah
to the three children that lost their life in North Minneapolis in a house fire.
Uh-huh.
Over
okay
the weekend, yes.
Okay. And do we have we been able to reach and share with us the organizers? It seems to be two or three different factions are having vigils and fundraisers and et cetera. Harding Smith, who we've had and talked to on previous occasions, seems to be the minister, I understand, for the family of the three deceased babies, if you will. Were we able to reach out to him? Did he respond to any of your text messages? And will he be joining us,
no,
or what?
No, he did not. And I wish he would have. And I've also contacted Mr. K.G. Wilson to call in, and I'm actually sending him a message as we speak, and to see if we can just get him to call in and talk about what's going on, because I'm seeing those two in every picture in the local media and just kind of, you know, want to get an update on what's happening.
Yes, the fire marshal indicated earlier this afternoon in press release that they may not be able to ever determine the cause of fire. That's a little bit surprising in light of the fact on Monday and Tuesday of this week, the indication was that a stove was the source of the fire, but apparently that is not an accurate description scientifically, so one would need to know it. And I think we had a piece in yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune in which a citizen, not a fire official or a person connected with officialdom, if you will, indicated that there were a couple windows that were boarded up prior to the fire. That doesn't make a lot of sense that you would put human beings in a house where a couple windows were boarded up. Maybe Mr. Wilson, K.G. Wilson, can give us some additional background. While we wait for that, I just want to indicate my deep felt expression to the Pendleton family and others, the individual involved in a terrible, terrible drunken driving accident 2 years ago on Olson Highway, Mr. Bertison, was sentenced by Hennepin County District Judge yesterday to 8 years in the state penitentiary for the deaths of the two young African-Americans in that terrible, terrible accident in which Mr. Burleson, a Caucasian contractor, was going in excess of 110 miles an hour down Olson Highway, the reconstruction of the scene indicated that he hit the, he actually hit, my God, I think four cars really, but he impacted the car that the two deceased were in at about 90 miles an hour. He was driving a big old heavy automobile, which probably explains the reason that, that he did not succumb also. But I know how hard the family fought and stood their ground, if you will. They'd had a number of memorials, if you will, and vigils there on Olson Highway, and really stayed tenacious, if you will, and just am happy, if you will, and appreciative for the justice that emerged in a Hennepin County District Courtroom yesterday. And because some had said that the perpetrator of this would probably wind up going free, if you will, but it didn't happen. So our continued condolences on one hand, but on the other, we certainly join them in their successful quest for justice, if you will. So hopefully K.G. Wilson, you say, or even Harding Smith, that's right. They're just wrapping up somewhere in Robbinsdale at the Reverend Harding Smith's church, a memorial service and kind of fundraiser, if you will, as if I remember correctly. It started at 6:30, I think, so I'd assume that it was kind of would kind of be moving towards completion. But hopefully they'll give us a call in. Mr. Allen, I understand you have some additional health information. Some startling information came forward. Was it yesterday or today? Why don't you kind of bring us up to speed on it?
Yeah, Mr. Harris, I wrote on Facebook that I was gritting my teeth when I got this press release from the Minnesota Department of Health saying that state awards grant to reduce state's most reported infectious disease, which is chlamydia. And so the state decided they would reach out to the High School for Recording Arts, to face-to-face health and counseling, and to North Point Health and Wellness, Community Restoring Urban Youth Sexual Health, which is an acronym for CRUSH, and they were going to give split between them $56,500. Now,
I mean,
to
do what?
$56,000
to do what?
To reduce chlamydia. Now, CRUSH, Mr. Edwards, is the same organization back in 2011 that received a smaller amount of money. I don't have the exact amount, so I'm not going to say it, but they received something because they're all over the Minnesota Department of Health website. But if you look from 2009 to 2013 and you look at the number of cases per 1,000 people, 100,000, excuse me, per 100,000 people in the state of Minnesota, and if you look at North Minneapolis, and I'm going to give you the numbers, you know, you have chlamydia. In 2009, there was 14,000 cases. 2010, 16,000.
Well, why don't we do this for our, you know, kind of non-medical people, kind of explain what this disease is, how it is transmitted, and what the health effects could be. Do you have that information in front of you over there in Studio A?
Chlamydia is a sexually transmitted disease. It's lack of hygiene, bathing, I guess. Yeah, taking baths, and it's sexually transmitted. The woman would have it more so than the guy would. The chlamydia is always tagged on women, usually, especially in North Minneapolis. And they say here, Mr. Edwards, that there's between, let me just get back to the stats here real quick, that just last year in 2013, there was 18,000 cases compared to zero cases of syphilis, zero cases of congenital syphilis, and there's a cancroid, which is a sore on the man's penis, zero cases of that. So it's by far one of the worst spread diseases in the state of Minnesota, sexually transmitted diseases, and especially in North Minneapolis. And so there's a lot of people in North Minneapolis. They stay here. We just go back there. I found a story that really no one looked back and read from North News, written in 2010. And in a production meeting, I was just kind of scrolling around. They says the population is considered, this is North Minneapolis, the population is considered at risk. 95% of the more than 8,000 young men contacted in the last 3 years reported being sexually active. 71% reported they had multiple sexual partners in the past 6 months. Many said they didn't use a condom and had never been tested for an HPV. In Minneapolis, African Americans, gonorrhea and chlamydia rates are higher than those for Caucasian, American Indians, Hispanics, Asian Pacific Islanders. White Caucasians came in second highest. Their numbers for chlamydia were below 600 a year and below 300 a year for gonorrhea. African American rates were between 1,200 and 1,500 a year for chlamydia and 800 and 600 for gonorrhea. So I don't understand, and it kind of troubles me that the Minnesota Department of Health is only, you know, dumping $56,000 between three, a recording art school, face-to-face counseling service, and North Point, and that will not solve the problem because they've done that before. And so I was a little troubled. I asked a couple people if they would call into the show tonight if they weren't busy to talk about this, who dealt with the Minnesota Department of Health. Hopefully they will get in touch with us sometime before the show's over. But, I mean, this is serious, Mr. Edwards, and it's really troubling. They think they can just throw this little chump change. I mean, this is something that has to be into the schools. Like in the 70s, you had, you know, this kind of education in the Minneapolis public schools where, you know, you were scared straight, basically, for lack of a better term, to make sure that, you know, this didn't happen to you or you weren't.
Let me ask the question with respect to that. Was kind of a triggering reference you just used. You were scared straight. Now, some people indicate that the transmission of this particular disease is an outgrowth of sexual preference. Is that correct?
Well, they say that, Mr. Edwards, but there's no, with all the women that have had, that are contracted chlamydia, that's not founded, or there's no really compelling evidence. I mean, sure, there is, if you are, they're saying, there's one report here I'm actually looking at, a snippet from it that says that, you know, these guys, especially in the Twin Cities, are getting out of prisons, going back to where they came, North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, St. Paul, North St. Paul, South St. Paul, et cetera, and they're going back to their girlfriend, and they might have been on the down low in prison, and they might be bringing something back to their girlfriends, and et cetera. And so that's one factor in this. But, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I haven't, you know, in the little research I've done tonight, I haven't really seen any compelling evidence that would say yay or nay to the fact that, you know, this is a disease brought on by having the same-sex partner.
Well, let me ask this question. What does the medical record show? When did this particular disease become publicly known? When did the public health services begin to talk about its presence in the general population? Do you have that information in front of you?
I am looking while we are talking, actually, because there was a history of chlamydia that I actually just saw and didn't print up. And it is actually right here. Here we go. Let me just grab it here real quick.
While we're doing that, I mean, also you have documentation there. I mean, we need to, you know, provide as much of an intelligent reflection as possible to our listening audience. So what are the signs of this particular disease? I mean, what kind of signs? You said something about cleanliness, hygiene, bathing, and et cetera. I mean, but what are the signs? I mean, are we talking about lesions, open sores, dripping, fluids? I mean, what are the signs to the person? Because I know earlier in the day you talked in terms that when you were in the military, as an example, and you were getting your lessons in sex, there was something about the watering in the eyes and clouding and et cetera. Could you elaborate a little bit more?
Okay, yeah, I will. And And this is going to shock you, but usually chlamydia has no symptoms. Most people are not even aware that they have an infection, especially women. It says 70 to 95% of women with chlamydia have no chlamydia symptoms. 90% of men with chlamydia have no chlamydia symptoms. If you do get chlamydia symptoms, they may begin as little as 5 to 10 days after you get the infection. Now, when women have chlamydia symptoms, they may experience abdominal pain, abnormal vaginal discharge, bleeding between the menstrual periods, a low-grade fever, pain during intercourse, a burning or burning feeling when they urinate, swelling inside the vagina around the anus, the urge to urinate more than usual. Now, when men have the symptoms, this is like this might be 10 days after you get the infection. They may experience pain or burning feeling while urinating, plus watery or milky discharge from the penis, watery eyes, swollen or tender testicles, swelling around the anus. Both women and men, chlamydia may cause you to itch all over and bleed. It also can result in discharge and diarrhea. If chlamydia infects the eyes, it may cause redness, itching, and discharge. If chlamydia affects the throat, it may cause soreness. So there's a lot of different things that go.
So is this information that you're talking about that you were analyzing over the last couple of days, I mean, is there some kind of medical alert that has been sent out by the Minneapolis Health Department and the State Health Department? I mean, because obviously people would say, well, why are you guys talking about this? I mean, is there some kind of alert? Is there something that that people need to be doing? Is there some kind of discussion and reflection that's going on between parents and their children, adults and young people? I mean, can you tell what
absolutely.
Is the genesis for this information?
Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, the genesis for this press release from the Minnesota Department of Health is to say that they gave some money to some organizations that deal with people of color, okay, to address this chlamydia. And the problem is there wasn't anything that predated this. There was no alert. You know, there was no – I mean, this thing has been growing from less than – what was it here? Less than 4,000 or 5,000 cases to 18,000 cases since 2009. And it's concentrated in the area of North Minneapolis. And, you know, all they do is they send out this – press release that says, okay, we gave some people some money. I mean, someone might have been complaining, someone might have said something, but I think the numbers, Mr. Edwards, they're seeing come through the Hennepin County Medical Center and North Memorial are alarming. And so this might have been just a knee-jerk reaction to try to stem this.
Okay.
Which is not gonna work.
Well, why don't you get a phone number in case there's anybody out there that maybe has some background. And because then I have a historical observation about, you know, a pattern of alert that I saw a number of years ago. Why don't you just give out the number here that, you know, if you have any comments or observations.
Yeah, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. The phone lines are wide open.
Reason I asked the question from the historical perspective was that about almost 20 years ago, our Turning Point, which is one of our programs here in North Minneapolis under Dr. Peter Hayden, actually had some well-structured program, education and et cetera. In fact, there was funding, I think, some of it was both federal and state about some of the infectious diseases, basically identified as an outcome of sexual activity, if you will. And it came at a, you know, historically a bad time here in the city of Minneapolis and, of course, the North Side, because HIV was ravishing the African American community and the gay and lesbian community, particularly the gay community. So I well remember discussions that were going on, and unfortunately there were a more than comfortable number of young African American females who were enrolled in some of these classes as an outgrowth of the fact that they were infected with HIV and other transmittable, sexual diseases. So I was just kind of wondering, let's say over the intervening 20 years, has there really been any effort? Now, I noticed one of the organizations that you identified is the only one of the three that you identified that has a health component. In other words, they have personnel who can help, hopefully both treat, eradicate, if you can eradicate it. I'm not sure what that observation medically is saying at this particular hour. But is there any number, is there a telephone number or such? You name three organizations. Do those three organizations have a phone number and, specifically a hotline? I hate to use that term per se. Do they have a hotline, those three organizations that you named and program called? You said the program is called CRUSH?
Yeah, that's CRUSH, and I don't have a number here. They're cited. No numbers in the press release except for the Doug Schultz, the Minnesota Department of Health Communications Specialist, that sent out the press release. But, Mr. Edwards, what's shocking, I don't think chlamydia is really even supposed to be in the black community, because I'm looking at some research that I had passed up to print out earlier, and it was discovered in 1907 by Stanislaus von Puskwek in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a long way from North Minneapolis, even in 2007.
The only problem is we've had two world wars. Occupation of Europe, particularly Germany, by American military forces, particularly after the Second World War. Guys have a tendency to play around, if you will, and you get something and you bring it on back home to your sweetheart, quote unquote, kind of thing. So I guess I'm not as concerned about the transmission, if you will, and the portal that opened up and wound up here in the United States, as I am in that it's been with us since 1907. What has been the policy, and at what point did it become of such an epidemic level in the African-American community, and particularly right here in the Twin Cities and particularly in North Minneapolis? What is it that has attracted this infectious disease into the male and female African-American population of just North Minneapolis? Is there any data that... empirical data? Have there been any workshops because I've been hearing references to this for quite some time. And what'd you say it was, $65,000 to three agencies? You still there, Don?
Yes, Mr. Edwards. It's $56,500 to these agencies.
Okay. For three agencies. Oh, okay.
Three agencies.
I see. That's about enough money to print up some pamphlets and
basically,
and I would think, based on the epidemic portions of what you said that the health department has sent out, that the figure would be more like $650,000. But okay, yeah. Well, like I said, phone lines are open on this particular reflection. Mr. Allen and myself were both hopeful that we would have some people that had worked on some of the projects that were put in place in the African American community as far back as 20 years ago to deal with this. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904.
And Mr.
Allen, you've been pointing out, unless we have a call in the queue, you had also pointed out over the last couple of days, and I guess people were trying to figure out the correlation, the deaths of three young African-American babies, angels, if you will. You have done some research and put together an analysis that talks about that maybe one of the responsible agencies, entities, is the former community Action program here in the city of Minneapolis. Could you elaborate a little bit more? Let's open the phone lines up for that also.
Yeah, the phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. And Mr. Edwards, my position on Community Action of Minneapolis, Bill Davis, the City of Minneapolis Inspections, and the Minneapolis Public Schools, I'm saying that they could be complicit in the death of not only the three children killed in North Minneapolis house fire over the weekend, but other deaths involving children. In February 2014, I think it was five children that died in a house in North Minneapolis. And and those deaths were children packed in inefficiently heated houses that died the worst death a child could die, death by fire, smoke inhalation. Now, if Community Action of Minneapolis failed these families, then city officials, Community Action of Minneapolis board members, local politicians, and the black leadership are complicit in overlooking something that went wrong a very long time. And what went wrong, as we know now, as we said, Mr. I, since 2008, you for the last 50 years, that there's a problem in the nucleus of the leadership in Minneapolis. And if Bill Davis is responsible and Community Action of Minneapolis is responsible that for these families having heat in their homes, or for the landlords to make sure that they have working furnaces, and this is not happening, or it has not happening, as evident, because one child dead behind a house fire, or mothers and fathers having stoves and ovens and things like that on, you know, we have a bigger problem than we think we have. And so that's what was my basic analysis of our analogy of just looking at, you know, this whole situation back from, you know, February 2014, and then earlier this year where the Hmong child died in a house fire. I think it was in St. Paul. And, I mean, you can go back every few years, Mr. Edwards, and find an incident of children in the Twin Cities or in the state of Minnesota dying in some type of house fire or apartment fire, for that matter. So, yeah,
okay,
I found it very troubling.
Okay, so, I mean, kind of your hypothesis is that there has been a lack of due diligence and accountability for those that are involved in administrating these programs that are, well, you know, just on the sexual transmitted diseases. And in this particular case, providing the necessary assistance to a population, particularly in a economically underdeveloped community, if you will, that this is a part of it. Is it something that have you determined if there's anything on the computers, on the cyber, which indicates there's been any kind of examination? Because, see, the first thing that will be said, and it's probably being said right now, is that, well, where is the empirical data that you guys are talking about that misappropriations of hundreds of thousands, not millions of dollars, that include aid for everything from weatherization to fuel assistance and et cetera is responsible? You know, where's you guys' quote-unquote bill of particulars, you know, if you're going to indict somebody, quote-unquote? So is there anything there that we can kind of guide people to that maybe could help some of these organizations, like Black Lives Matter, the Urban League, the NAACP organizations that say they are about the grassroots organization within a community to deal with issues? Example, I mean, downtown this afternoon at City Hall was a fairly small but aggressive group talking in terms of developing policies coming out of City Hall that will require an increase in the minimum wage, you know, from basically $9 to $15 and et cetera. Is there any organization out here, by the way, that's taking a look at this problem of heating here in the Twin Cities?
And Mr. Edwards, you know, you had mentioned, you just hit the nail on the head there, because no, I mean, we don't have any Urban League, Black Lives Matter, NAACP, or anybody spearheading this. But what you said, this all goes together, and I have to explain this. Just take a minute and explain this to you and our listeners. I mean, you already know this, Mr. Edwards. I'm singing to the choir, but I need to explain this. There's two things here. We started out the show talking about this chlamydia and all this stuff that was going on. Now, in 2008, when they first started to figure out that, oh, wow, this chlamydia is happening, the Minnesota Department of Health spread money everywhere in the black community. I don't have the exact amount. I've been looking for it for 3 hours and just get frustrated and stop. But they spread money out everywhere in 2008. The best idea that our black agencies could come up with is a bowl of condoms at the front desk. Okay. Now, we walked into some of them agencies where you see condoms to the right at the desk or to the left or up there, just easy access. Now, you come to this weatherization project, all this money, this lead removal in houses, and all this other different stuff that the city and the state and the feds have put money into North Minneapolis, more importantly, the weatherization piece through the Community Action of Minneapolis. But still, you see tons of homes in North Minneapolis with people living in them with boarded-up windows, inefficient screens, nothing that could pass. Ms. Edwards, if you and I had a construction company and built houses in North Minneapolis, if they were brand-smaking new $150,000, $200,000 homes and we didn't have a screen on the front, the inspector wouldn't even let our house pass inspection. But yet you have tons of people in North Minneapolis living in these houses and South Minneapolis, all over the Twin Cities, that aren't up to code. I mean, you could look at the landlords.
Let me take exception now to what you just said, because in both in yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star and Tribune and the previous day, which would have been Monday's edition of the Star Tribune, there was a continuous reference to the fact that the house along the 2700 block of Penn Avenue North, where this tragedy took place of three young African-American children losing their lives, was that the house had been inspected. Now, in yesterday's article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, a woman was identified by name who had lived in that particular house for 2 years. It did not indicate when she had actually moved from that house, but she indicated that during the entire 2 years that she was a resident there, that the furnace never worked. Yet in the same article, both on Monday and the same article on Tuesday and an article today, the Star Tribune and authorities indicated there had been an inspection. There had been a couple of citations, but that was corrected, and the most recent correction was allegedly April of 2014. So, and I wish that we could hear from some of the folks who have been saying this afternoon around town and other places that the house was boarded up, that a couple windows were boarded up prior to the fire and the deaths of the three children. But
that brings you to
the question of, you know, we saw this with the loss of the five children that you cited earlier in that horrible fire and the deaths of those five babies, that allegedly the house had been inspected and et cetera, yet we all know, and to remind people who tend to forget, that fire in that home started right in the middle of the floor, if you will, with a space heater. Actually literally exploded. In fact, they actually burnt a hole all the way through the floor down to the second floor and almost into the main floor. It was a three-story house. So is there some need for an examination of the protocol that we have or don't have here in Minneapolis, as an example, in St. Paul, about code enforcement in those areas in which the people are kind of marginalized and maybe their lives aren't quite as important as a person in Edina or Chanhassen or Minnetonka or something like that? Or is that what we're kind of saying, Mr. Allen?
I would have to agree with that assessment 100%, because you have, you know, these houses in North Minneapolis. Like I said earlier, I mean, Mr. Harris, I've seen people coming out of these houses where windows are boarded up, screen doors are tore up, and it just doesn't seem like these houses could possibly be up to code, be those renters or owners. there's a problem there. And I agree with the statement that there has been. I would allege that there are some lax inspections. You have 5-8 children within 2 years die in house fires in North Minneapolis alone. That's 8 mm-hmm. too many, period.
Mm-hmm.
There's no excuse. And so, there's a lot of questions. I had a source to call me and say that the window was boarded up in the house. Windows were boarded in that house. And I asked that source to call tonight, and he did not get back with me, but I did put out a message, and hopefully they will get back to me.
Well, let's do this again. Again, the phone number, the Don and Ron program, we're talking about code enforcement in North Minneapolis on the heels of the deaths of 3 African-American babies, really children, a couple days ago. Phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, the phone number is 347-426-3904. And this comes on the heels of a little bit of controversy about who's representing the interest, that we would be derelict in our responsibility as journalists not to indicate that, once again, as it did in the case of Barway Collins and his father, Pierre Collins, who now is serving life in prison for, killing his son, according to his plea bargain. But again, now we're seeing statements being made. We see a statement attributed, according to the Star Tribune, to Pastor Harding Smith, Mr. Allen and I both know, who said that the vigil at Holsley Memorial AME Church in North Minneapolis on, was the 12th and Logan, was not authorized, whatever that's supposed to mean, by the family of the deceased children, and that the one that he was holding this evening, which started at 6 or 6:30, was the official, quote-unquote, memorial service. What is this all about again? Is this about really helping the family, or what's left of the family, if you will? Or is this about, getting your name in the paper? What's your take on it, Don?
It's very interesting when we have these casualties in the community and the different people that pop up. It's like one of those pop-up books. If there's a action, there's a reaction, rather than a reaction before the reaction, a response before the action. And so I just look at that, and it concerns me. And I'm just sitting back at this point, Mr. Edwards, and watching all this, because this stuff deteriorates rather quickly. You had people when the 5 children in February succumbed to the fire in their apartment. You had some of these same people, Mr. Edwards, out doing the same thing.
But let's be clear for our listening audience. February of 2014, right? Yeah.
2014, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And I have not seen any results, anything. I don't even hear anybody talking about these children or their families anymore. So.
Yeah. We've had children found hung from swing worms and and et cetera. It never cleared up, we have a lot of these tragedies and deaths and et cetera. It just kind of seems like it's treated a little bit differently than it would be if this was a Caucasian child, a white child, a beautiful, blue-eyed, blonde-haired white child, as opposed to a beautiful brown-skinned, brown-eyed young African-American child, and et cetera. I'm just not sure. I've seen it happen with continued frequency, if you will, particularly in light of, you would think that we'd be concerned with the latest statistics. Let's go to that for a minute, because of one of the news services reported on the meeting of the NAACP and its leadership with Governor Mark Dayton here a couple weeks ago. I understand my good friend Claudel Washington was brought down from Duluth the state conference president and president of the Rochester, Minnesota branch came up, if you will. Folks came out of, I assume would be Jeff Martin and them, and of course Nikki Pounds and et cetera. But I'm kind of hearing rumblings, if you will, that some of the top officers of the Minneapolis NAACP were not invited. Now, I have to say this, Mr. Allen, so that he doesn't have to put himself in the middle of something. I was aware that an inquiry was made almost 3 weeks before the meeting with the governor, which took place almost 3 weeks ago, about if the top-ranking officials of the Minneapolis NAACP had been notified that there was to be this meeting and et cetera. And Mr. Allen, my associate, was told that he didn't know what he was talking about and there was no meeting. Apparently now there's been notification that there clearly was one, and that there was a quote-unquote selectivity that took place of who could come, who couldn't come. And I wish that and hope that we can get a call from our friend Mr. Nelson, who has really been on top of watching and kind of monitoring what has been going on with the local branch of the NAACP. The reason it's become so important is the governor has expressed that he is concerned about the latest statistics and data, though he wasn't able to comment in the first 72 hours that the report came out about the fact that the economic bottom has dropped out of, quote-unquote, the African-American community to the in 2014. We don't know what it's going to look like in 2015, of at least 14 to 15% income capability has been lost by the African-American community. Maybe that explains the reason that folks go into a home, as this tragic family had to, and no one is really talking about it. But there was, there was no furniture in that house. Those the babies were sleeping on the floor, and I'm just kind of wondering, you know, with the Salvation Army and different organizations around, Catholic Charities and et cetera, and with all these folks talking in terms of providing for the needs of the poor, you know, the indigent and et cetera, how is it that a family that came here from Illinois, obviously appears from Chicago, are here for a short period of time, but rent a home and go into a home along the 2700 block of 10th Avenue North? They don't even have any furniture, man. I mean, that is so sad. That is so distressful. And actually, that is kind of an indictment. I know what my leaders say, that some of the leaders say, you know, man, you will, you know, Negro, you will not indict me. It ain't my problem. I well remember a statement made after the tornado of 2011 when one of our leaders told a black woman who was merely asking for a small donation so that she could wash the clothes of her and her family in a washing machine in one of the public laundry facilities, and she was told, "I'm not here for you to get money out of my pocket," as if the monies that were coming in, you know, belonged to the leader. And I just want us to think about that for a moment, Mr. Allen, this tragedy, mm-hmm. that these children move into a place, even though weather has been, you know, unseasonally, you know, warm and et cetera, but you don't even have any furniture in the house.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, where is the support service that we are told is in existence? I'm just not understanding, and I'm interested to see if there's anybody out there with us tonight that is listening that has any observations, if you will, about these kinds of circumstances and what it does to the, and the key word I like to use is what it does to the quality of life of a community, of a people. I don't know. Maybe I'm just off base. Maybe it's okay. I don't know.
No, it's not okay, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, these agencies that should, you know, like I got a text message talking about, well, what are you going to do? Well, I just, again, I have to explain this. You all don't call the Star Tribune and ask them what they're going to do. And there's a agencies in North Minneapolis. This is not supposed to happen, but I'm going to tell you, a lot of people I've talked to, I was just over at UROC a couple of days ago. I just stopped through to see if I could connect with somebody, and an older woman came across the street from the Urban League and asked me, well, what do they do here? I said, this is part of the University of Minnesota, kind of explained and sent her to someone at the front desk. And after she got done, she says, oh, well, this is not the place that I need to go to. And it turns out that she, too, was trying to get some furniture and get her clothes done. And she says she had a job and she's trying to get a monthly bus pass. Just, you know, there was a time, I guess, the Urban League gave out bus tokens and things like that for people to get back and forth to work when they first get a job or get to medical appointments, and et cetera.
Yes, there used to be a time when the Urban League would do that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and she said she went over there and absolutely nothing was going on. They couldn't even give her a resource or someone to call to help her and her family. Four children, 12, yeah. 12, 10, yeah. 8, and 7. Yes.
Wow. Let me just say this to the person that you said text you, because we always encourage people to call. The lines are open. We don't cut them off. I can well remember a time when the Urban League paid for the funerals of four children that died in a fire just behind the 4th Precinct here in North Minneapolis. Four young African-American children died in a horrible fire. And there was no hesitation on the part of the Urban League to immediately step up, reach into its treasury, if you will, and pay for the services and the internment, quote-unquote, of those children. I have recognized over the last 10 years that has obviously been lost, if you will, and you know, we don't discuss what has happened. Now, we got a challenge last week, and I know as I did my part of the broadcast from the West Coast, which was quite a trip in and of itself, but I remember we got a call from a woman the week before that really raised some tough questions to us about what was going on and when was community going to speak up about some of these problems and lack of fundamental ability by our institutions to even appear to take care of the minimal needs of our people, yet still millions of dollars are being poured into our community. We give away awards and prizes and et cetera for services rendered. And then when you ask the question, what services are rendered, you know, I still think back in terms of all of that tobacco money that disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. After the tobacco settlement, and the Cerisi law firm put together a package just for the state of Minnesota, because this is the headquarters of the Cerisi law firm. And in fact, you and I know, Mr. Allen, that actually the Council on Black Minnesotans under Mr. Collins at that time was the fiduciary agent. And man, there was just millions of dollars that over a period of 5 years that just kind of went out to everybody but the people that the tobacco settlement identified as having need to be the beneficiaries of this tobacco money for education, health problems, and et cetera. But, you know, I guess we're probably not supposed to talk about stuff like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. The stuff that you're not supposed to stay clear of and not say anything. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. By the way, must always, and again, phone lines are open. Were we going for an hour, hour and a half tonight, Mr.?
We are going for an hour tonight, sir.
Good. Because it seems to be a little slow and et cetera, and I imagine folks trying to get their thoughts together. You know, I assume we're going out across the country and et cetera. Any update on what our new plans are for our history museum? and that the property has now been sold off at auction to pay off the debt and the those people that were demanding their money, basically all white quote unquote enterprises, business, etc. So do we have a new plan? Is there a new plan in place?
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, I'm not seeing a new plan, but also I'm not seeing a consolidation and the disposition of where the original dollars were contained. There is no final report, who got paid, who didn't get paid. Well, we know who didn't get paid because they own the land and the building now. But
That's correct. That's correct.
Yes, they went back and
now there's still some debt outstanding. Franklin National Bank hasn't got all their money. So the state of Minnesota / Hennepin County has not gotten all of their quote-unquote money, but they did extract, if you will, $1.3 million from the auction. It just took 5 minutes to see the potential for the history of black Minnesotans just to disappear. It took 5 minutes at that auction. But the construction company got the most of their $800,000. Franklin Bank got some of their $1 million. I don't know what the deal is with the state. And I do notice that the Star Tribune basically kind of stayed away from kind of giving that kind of breakdown, if you will. But, you know, I understand that, you know, we must move on. We were oftentimes told that. So, you know, and moving on, I'm just trying to figure out, is there a plan by the current officers of a organization? I know they've shifted much of their quote-unquote portfolio over to the NAACP. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
I mean, will that get it done? You know, again, is there a plan? You know, will we see some architectural, you know, pictures of what our next physical facility will look like? Or should we just kind of close the books and maybe think in another generation that we'll start talking about a black museum for black people in white Minnesota? I'm just asking a question, Ms. Al. We've got about 9 minutes left, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't see it happening with this crew here, Mr. Edwards. I don't know even if my lifetime will have a African American History Museum. And it's really strange, the tenor of talk and whisper campaigns that are going on right now, especially in the philanthropic community. Mm-hmm. And I had the privilege to sit in a meeting a couple of days ago, and people were saying, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't do any direct funding to this agency over here because these people are involved, these particular people that they mentioned were involved with this agency, who were involved with the NAACP, who were involved with the museum, who was involved in the local colleges, two different colleges, and people are stepping back. But what that's doing to the black community is that a lot of people are just not interested. This is a lot of people in the philanthropic community in the Twin Cities are not interested. They've been burnt by CSI. They've been burnt by the museum folks. And if you have a great idea in the black community, for the black community, it's usually a money hustle. And that's just
and
my personal
words, you're
generalization.
Saying the philanthropic community is kind of saying to us, even if it's a good idea that has a certain level of purity, why don't you colored people just kind of put it on hold?
Put it on hold,
told?
You guys do it yourself. Yep.
Okay.
And we have a caller, Mr. Edwards. We have a caller.
Go ahead, caller.
You're live on the air.
Gentlemen, am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Yes. Thank you for joining us. We thought we were talking to the silent plains of Mars. Go ahead. What's your observation?
Well, you know, in regards to the, you know, African American Museum, I still have just one question. Where did the money go? I mean, it seems like that question should be answered. I mean, I don't know why they allow, you know, those type of funds to dissipate into the ozone, and then the funders say, well, we've given you money, so we're not going to give you any more. We give you money, and then it dissipates into the ozone. So, well, why don't we find that trail of money? You know, why don't we? What, it's somewhere.
Well, in it, no one has that never was a report issued, and particularly in light of the auction that was held a couple weeks ago, and you know, our museum went up in smoke. I think that we'll just deal in speculation and investigation. Oh, but by the way, gentlemen, I'm glad, Em, that you called, because there is somebody. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. We tried to get some response. Everybody got quiet. The legislative auditor. Yes, I'm glad you asked the question, because I can kind of give a quick update. Legislative auditor. And by the way, they tell me that this was part of the back and forth, the ugliness that took place at the NAACP last night. The legislative auditor, Mr. James Noble, is investigating where the money went.
They tell me that there
is a pipeline. I don't want to over-exaggerate the expression, but there's a pipeline between Minnesota and Las Vegas.
I don't know
if it stops at some of the big hotels
and gambling tables.
They tell me the legislative auditor has already been winking and looking over at the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, Mr. Andy Lugar, saying that there could be a similarity in legal consequences similar to the Community Action Agency.
Very interesting. That's something I'll be watching very closely. But I did want to make one quick announcement here. I know you're getting to the end of your program. And, you know, in your paper, Mr. Edwards, there was an article, this week, last week, on a young lady from the Twin Cities area. She is, has achieved academic excellence. She's a Harvard graduate, PhD from Columbia, and she just received a very prestigious Fulbright scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this young lady is a doctor, PhD, Dr. Shonda L. Scott from the Twin Cities area.
Mm-hmm.
Graduate of Minneapolis Central High School. And she has the Fulbright. Actually, she is in Africa right now, in South Africa, doing training in Cape Town, South Africa.
Okay.
And the reason I bring that up, not only to congratulate this young lady, but the young lady is my sister. I will be joining her in Africa Sunday. I will be, and hopefully next week, gentlemen, I will call you from South Africa.
We look forward to it, sir. We look forward to it.
I would love to do that. I will give you a call, and we'll be live on the air, and hopefully I'll be broadcasting to you live from the...
As you did last year from Ferguson, Missouri.
As I did last year from Ferguson, Missouri.
Yes. Hopefully
we'll be making a call, and... As I get close to that trip, it just brings up a lot of things. My people coming up from the South, making these journeys, the things that our people have gone through, that we continue to go through, and the buffoonery that we have kind of let ourselves be led into now, when there's a very serious thing. Our freedom and our education and our things for our children are very serious. And this kind of really points out to me the journey that we've taken to get this far. And there's no way we're tired. And we're going to turn this thing around. Hopefully I'll talk to you gentlemen.
And we hope to hear from you from our South Africa.
All right.
Thank you, sir. All right. Well, Mr. Allen, you began to take us home. That would be a nice conversation piece for the Don and Ron program. We've had calls from Manchester, England, and places like that, and Bangladesh. We had a call from the Persian Gulf. A lot of people didn't recognize where that caller was actually coming from. If you remember, a number of weeks ago, from Bathron, if you will, and we've had some calls from another part of Asia. So I always feel good when we're able to pick up that kind of international linkage. But go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, I just like to say, in our closing couple of minutes here, story is Star Tribune blog called Class Act by Alexandria Matos. A study shows that less than 50% of Minneapolis students graduate high school. And that article should be in the Star Tribune. It's online now with a link to the agency in Milwaukee that did the Center for Reinventing Public Education, who did the study. And they're finding Minneapolis is like at the lowest graduation rate compared to 50 other major cities, according to the study released by the Washington-based Education Group.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is going to start blowing up, Mr. Harris, because we have a lot of these collective impact agencies collecting money from the state and the feds to operate, like Minnesota Education, Next Generation with R.T. Ryback. You have MNEEP. And all these other agencies talking about they're doing this and doing that, but yet these children aren't graduating. So, and that's all. That's the only piece I had, and it is actually 9:30.
Mm-hmm. It's just Greenwich Central Time. And if we can still let James take us home, man.
Well, here we go.
All right.